When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Maryland sports fans, there's only one sports book in the great state of Maryland with over 50 years experience booking bets and supporting customers. Betfred Sportsbook at Longshots is now open and is the only sports book in Frederick offering cash betting on football, basketball, world soccer, and more. Visit the Betfred Sportsbook at I-270 and MD-85 in Frederick, right next to Longshots off-track betting. Go to betfredsports.com for more information and your chance to win exclusive merchandise. Must be 21 or older. Play responsibly. For help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Does picking an outfit have you running a little too fashionably late? We get it. Great taste takes time. That's why Drizly, the number one app for alcohol delivery, has your back with the largest selection of beer, wine, and spirits delivered in under 60 minutes. Convenience never goes out of style. So if you need to spend some extra time in the mirror instead of at the store, download the Drizly app or go to drizly.com. That's drizly.com today.
1, 2, 3. Clint, the first rule of show business is always leave them wanting more. But it's hard to do. In this episode, we talk about the artists that walked away on their own terms. Welcome to The Age-Old Question. I'm Rich Price.
And I'm Clint Bierman. Each episode deals with another question in music fandom.
The kind of questions that Clint and I have been debating since we were in college.
So today, with the help of some smart people, we're going to come up with the answer.
Okay, Clint, what's today's question?
Today's question is, who walked away at their peak?
That's the age-old question. Leave them wanting more. It's hard to do, Clint, isn't it?
It is. Many people have tried. Sports, too. But how do you leave on top?
But there are actually a few examples of artists stepping away from their massive success on their own terms, leaving the audience wanting more. Start us off.
Well, we're not talking about death here. We're not talking about Janis Joplin. We're not talking about
Jimi Hendrix,
Kurt Cobain. We're talking about,
because those people didn't walk away.
Right. They were taken away. We're talking about people that for one reason or another decided to not do it anymore. So I'm going to start off with somebody, a duo.
Okay.
And they're from the early 90s.
Okay.
Late 80s, early 90s.
Hmm.
A band called Milli Vanilli.
Milli Vanilli.
Now, you may think that they didn't walk away.
Yes.
But they did walk away.
Okay.
They were forced away, but they were at their peak, man. They were humongous.
Huge.
They had won the Grammy for Best New Artist. They had 4 number one hits. I mean, they were crushing.
4 number one hits.
And then it all went south. And they just stepped away.
They've gone beyond platinum and become international stars. But behind the braids and the breakdancing, it turns out, there's a soundtrack by someone else. Rob Pilatus and Fab Morvan are Milli Vanilli, but they're not the singers heard on the group's 7 million record albums. Just last year, the National Academy of Recording Arts and Sciences named Milli Vanilli Best New Artist. The award may now be withdrawn. It was their producer who blew the whistle, reportedly concerned when Rob and Fab said they wanted to be heard on their next album.
So I guess you're technically right. They were exposed as being not the singers.
And it was not them. They were pawns in this guy's whole scheme. And it's the saddest story in the world. It really is. Like, these poor dudes just wanted to sing on their own records, and the guy wouldn't let them. So here's the story.
Yeah.
The group was founded by Frank Farian in 1988. This guy, Frank, sees these two guys, and they're very pretty guys. They're very attractive dudes. They got great dance moves. They can sing. So Frank invites them to his studio. He's got these tracks that we now know as Milli Vanilli tracks. Has the guys sing the tracks, and he's not that impressed. So he gets a couple other guys to come in here, finish the record.
Right.
Sends them out on tour. Does the grind, like they just hit the road hard.
And they're lip syncing.
And they're lip syncing. And the whole time they're like, Frank, when are we going to get to sing? We can sing. Let us sing. Why are you doing this to us? He's like, at the next one, you're going to sing. Don't worry. Just, we got to follow this through because we're hitting right now. You can't back out now.
And he keeps stringing them along. Keep
stringing them along. Next record, you're going to sing. Don't worry. You got this. You got this.
So what are you doing back?
Well, I sat back and thought about the things we used to do. It really meant a lot to me. You mean a lot to me.
I really mean that much to you?
Girl, you know it's true.
So now it's July 21st, 1989. A live performance on MTV. They're singing their song.
Yeah.
And the record starts to skip. And Rob is on stage and it's him singing the chorus and it starts skipping and he just freaks out and he runs off stage.
I wanted to die. It stopped. Girl, you know it's girl, you know it's girl. 80,000 people. Girl, you know it's girl. You know, I couldn't repeat it 15 times. Girl, you know, it got obvious. Still. So I stopped, I panicked, I ran off stage. Julie Brown, who used to work for MTV, ran after me. I didn't want to go back to stage. I had enough. 80,000 people waiting. I said, I have enough. I quit.
He knew from that moment on it was like the end of the road. They ended up winning the Grammy for Best New Artist in 1990. Sadly, it was taken away from them.
Oh.
Which is crazy, right? They think about, the way I think about this is, how is this any different than autotune? Right. It is no different in any way than autotune. You're scamming the public now with pop music, right? Just because these, I mean, I get it. They didn't sing it, and on the record it said they sang it. But that was all this Frank Farian guy.
So let's get back to their story. So they get exposed.
They get exposed.
They take the Grammy away.
They take it away. Rob kind of loses it a little bit. He gets like arrested. He does drugs. He was put in jail for assault. Starts drinking heavily.
Hits rock bottom.
And eventually they found him dead in a hotel room in Frankfurt, Germany, of a alcohol and prescription drug overdose. And he was 32 years old. So this guy who was on top of the world, but the whole time knowing it was a lie.
Right.
And it would just eat at them. And they like,
just waiting to be found out as a fraud.
What a terrible feeling. And the whole time being like, I don't want to do this. You know, like, let us sing it.
But he was vilified.
For no reason. I mean, what's the difference between lip syncing and autotune? Really? Oh, the autotune makes you sound like something you're not. Like, right. Some of these people can't sing, but they sing in perfect pitch. They're faking it too. So, right. Anyway, I feel real bad for these guys. That it's not really walking away at their peak.
He was sort of escorted away.
Escorted away.
Which is, I guess, walking.
It's a sad story.
It's a type of walking.
They were at their peak. I mean, I remember Milli Vanilli. I mean, I had the jams. I had the dance moves. I knew exactly what was hip. Blame it on the rain that was falling. Blame it on the stars that didn't shine that night. Whatever you do, don't put the blame on you. Blame it on the rain, yeah, yeah. You can blame it on the rain. I think people sued Milli Vanilli. They sued and won.
Give us our money back. This is not what we bought.
Yep.
Who does that?
That's crazy talk.
Get a life.
Anyway. All right. Who's your first one?
I'm going to start with a band that I would contend has more talent than those guys.
Okay.
The Police.
Okay. I would agree.
The fifth and final studio album was Synchronicity from 1983. You and I have talked many times. Yeah. On this show about the fact that we do a series called Select Sessions where we celebrate one album. And I think the fifth or sixth show we did was Synchronicity.
And it blew my mind. It's so good.
It's so good. It was their most successful release, including hits like Every Breath You Take. Every breath you take. King of Pain. Wrapped Around Your Finger. And Synchronicity 2. The album won 3 Grammys. And when they were touring behind that album, they were, by just about every measure, the biggest band in the world. And yet, they walked away, or really, Sting walked away.
Right.
During the Synchronicity World Tour, the band played at Shea Stadium. And it was apparently during this time that Sting thought, this is Everest. This is the peak. And he decided that he needed to walk away.
My instinct was that we'd achieved everything we could possibly have thought to achieve, tenfold, 100-fold. After that, you get diminishing returns of satisfaction. So I needed to take another risk with my life. And of course I had momentum because of the success of the Police. Whatever I did next, people would be at least curious. Mm-hmm. And so I used that momentum to kind of boost me into another career. But it was a risk. But I think art is always about taking a risk.
In our very first episode, we talked about how Sting avoided the trap of the expert and being a prisoner to the band's legacy by taking a massive left turn. He assembled a band of jazz musicians, Kenny Kirkland on keyboards, who'd played with Dizzy Gillespie and Elvin Jones, Branford Marsalis on saxophone, Daryl Jones on bass, who'd been in the Miles Davis band, and would later join
the Stones,
the Rolling Stones, where he's still playing
right
in the Rolling Stones.
Not a member.
Never in any press photos. And Omar Hakim on drums, who had been in the Weather Report and would later go on to drum in Dire Straits for the Brothers in Arms record. Together, this jazz band backed Sting to record songs for his solo debut, Dream of the Blue Turtles. In the empire of the senses, you're the queen of all you survey. All the cities, all the nations, everything that falls your way. There is a deeper world than this that you don't understand. There is a deeper world than this tugging at your hand. Every ripple on the ocean, every leaf on every tree, every sand dune in the desert, every pile we never see. This was a big commercial hit and was nominated for 4 Grammys. Here again is his interview with Rick Beato, talking about how ultimately he was seeking a bigger palette than the Police could offer.
You know, I just wanted a larger palette, and the three piece is a wonderful vehicle, but it's limited.
Yeah. You know,
drums, bass, and guitar. And I think we achieved an amazing amount of stuff in the short time we were together. Very unique. But I just wanted a broader palette because I was song-driven and not necessarily band-driven.
Right.
So I then started to form bands which could play whatever I wanted to write. So the first album that I did without the Police was with Branford and Kenny Kirkland and,
Omar.
And
Daryl Jones,
fantastic group, all from the jazz world.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one thing, but the palette was widened. And then, you know, I formed a band with Dominic and Vinny and David Sanctius. But they had a breadth of experience in playing any kind of genre. So whatever I felt like writing, they could help me do it.
Thank you.
the essence of all music is surprise. When I listen to a piece of music, if I'm not surprised within the first 8 bars, I've stopped listening. I've switched off. I need surprise. Dominic and I both have a teacher called J.S. Bach, and you play eight measures of Bach, and you're surprised every time.
Every time.
Every time. And then the next 8 bars and the next 8 bars. So composition is really about surprise.
The Police did reunite to play 3 concerts for the Amnesty International tour in 1986. And they got back together in the studio to record a 6th studio album. But the night before, Stuart Copeland fell off his horse and broke his collarbone. And according to the guitarist Andy Summers, that meant we lost the chance of recovering some of the rapport that we could get just by jamming together.
You know, we stopped at the absolute peak, and that was really because of his, you know, lust for a solo career, which he did, you know, to the shock of the world and, you know, to his own success with it and all the rest of it. But I think the real truth is that we were all in this amazing band, and that none of us, no matter what we do, are ever going to really transcend that fact. It's just like the Beatles. You're never going to get past that.
I don't know if anybody's done a bigger left turn.
He walked away from this massive success that was the Police.
And he knew in his heart of hearts that he still had it and that he was not going anywhere.
Right.
But it's tough to walk away from the biggest band in the world.
Tough to walk away when you're playing stadiums.
Man. My next one is a band from Atlanta, Georgia. Outkast.
Oh.
So Outkast was a hip-hop duo formed in 1992 in East Point, Georgia, consisting of Andre 3000 and Antoine Big Boy Patton.
Yeah, this one right here goes out to all the babies, mamas.
Andre 3000 is known by other rappers as one of the greatest rappers of all time.
Such a distinct sound voice.
And lyrically, he's witty and funny and quick. And
I'm sorry, Miss Jackson. I am for real. Never meant to make your daughter cry. I apologize a trillion times. I'm sorry, Miss Jackson. Ooh, I am for real.
Just really interesting. They took hip hop to a new place.
It's very musical.
Yeah, right. Miss Jackson.
Miss Jackson.
Yeah, just, I mean, hey, yeah.
1, 2, 3, my baby don't mess around because she loves me so.
Not like hip-hop at the time, or even now, really. It's like its own brand.
Right.
They were huge in the mid-90s to the early 2000s. And they did like funk, psychedelia, jazz, techno. They had all these things.
Very eclectic.
Very eclectic. And so in 2003, they released their double album, Speakerbox / The Love Below. And so that had Hey Ya. So it won Grammy for Album of the Year. They next released the soundtrack for the 2006 film Idlewild, which they also starred in. Now in 2007, they go on hiatus. They did reunite in 2014 to celebrate their 20th anniversary by performing at more than 40 festivals worldwide.
Oh.
Beginning at the Coachella Festival in April. And then, that was it. No more Outkast.
You think you got it, fool, you think you got it, but got it, just don't get it, 'cause there's nothing at all.
They're recognized as one of the most successful hip-hop groups of all time, receiving 6 Grammy Awards, and Rolling Stone ranked them number 7 on its list of the greatest duos of all time. So, what happened? So, Andre 3000 was just interviewed by Rick Rubin. This is the quote that really sums it up. He says, "My focus is not there. My confidence is not there. I tinker a lot. I'll just go to a piano and I'll set my iPhone down and just record what I'm doing, moving my fingers and whatever happens, but I haven't been motivated to do a serious project." So he lost confidence, lost drive, just at the top of their game. Guy just didn't want to do it anymore. Stopped making music. I was reading this thing and he like goes to open mic nights and like plays flute. and like just doesn't want anything to do with the industry. He just completely stepped away.
It's interesting. In a lot of ways, this conversation is a companion piece to can you write a masterpiece after the age of 40?
Hmm.
And, you know, for all the reasons we talked about in that episode as to why it's so difficult to do that, you become a prisoner to your legacy.
Right.
People want to define you by what you've done before and are less interested in having you break the mold. You become massively wealthy and you no longer live a life that is relatable in any meaningful way to an audience.
Right.
I wonder if some of those things played in
must have
to what he was going through.
Yeah.
That he now he's this odd recluse who goes to open mic nights playing the flute.
Yeah. I don't know. So Outcast.
That's a good one.
What else you got?
We have to discuss the Beatles.
Of course.
When the Beatles broke up officially in early 1970, they were still massive, arguably the biggest band in the world, right?
Yes.
In fact, their last recorded album, Abbey Road, is arguably their best work.
Yes.
It's hard to argue with the fact, Clint, that the Beatles walked away at their peak.
Hard to argue.
Right?
Yep.
I've heard Jerry Seinfeld say on a number of occasions that when he was trying to decide when he should end his TV show, his massively successful show, Seinfeld. He turned to the lesson provided by the Beatles for knowing when was enough.
It was such a big thing in my life to try and figure that out in the moment.
Yeah.
When do I end this? And you're inside the organism. It's just hard to do because you can't see the show. I don't even know what I don't even know what these people like about it so much.
Who did you turn to when you were making that did you have anybody in your
honestly,
life that was
the Beatles.
Really?
The Beatles.
They were on speed dial or
well, no, because the Beatles ended too soon for me.
Uh-huh.
And it was also 9 years. And it was the something about the single digit, 10 years. So people say, so how many years did you do that show? 10 years. Oh, geez.
Right.
That was a long time.
Right.
How many years did you do that show? 9 years.
Wow.
It seemed a lot less.
It really does.
You know?
Yeah, it really
and
does.
When the Beatles did 9 years and that hunger for the Beatles that has lasted my whole life.
Right.
Whenever a Beatles song comes on the radio, I reach for the volume and turn it up because I still haven't gotten enough of them.
Wow.
That was really how I made the decision.
Wow.
Beatles, 9 years.
That is amazing.
It's enough.
When is enough? Sorry.
That's good. That's good. What's the opposite of walking away at your peak? Consider this. The Rolling Stones just kicked off their 60th anniversary tour.
Wow.
That's more than 50 years longer than the Beatles.
Wow.
Some other bands that have lasted long past their peak. You ready?
Yeah.
Red Hot Chili Peppers, formed in 1983.
Mm-hmm. Still relevant,
playing.
Though. In a way.
Past their peak.
Past their peak.
Metallica, formed in 1981. Would you say they're still peaking?
No, but they're still relevant in a nostalgia way.
Aerosmith.
Peaked.
They're 52 years in.
Wow.
Contemporaries of the Beatles that are still playing, The Who, formed in 1964, still going, 58 years.
Yeah.
The Beach Boys, formed in 1961. I think Mike Love is the only original member, but they're still touring. Rolling Stone magazine recently named its official selection of the longest running band. And it's none of those bands I just mentioned.
What?
Their pick, U2, formed in 1978. And you're doing some quick cocktail napkin math and saying out loud, but Rich, Clint, 44 years for U2 is less than 60 years for the Rolling Stones. That's true. But we're not going to play Rich and Clint or Boneheads just yet. All right. We'll play it just because.
One time.
Just one time.
Rich and Clint are boneheads.
But in this instance, we're not boneheads. Rolling Stone magazine cites the fact that this lineup of U2 has remained unchanged since 1978. While those other bands have seen a number of lineup changes, the Rolling Stones alone have seen Brian Jones die, Ian Stewart leave, Mick Taylor come and go, Bill Wyman retire, and Charlie just died.
Mm-hmm.
But U2, in contrast, has always been Bono, The Edge, Adam, and Larry.
Wow.
So she woke up from where she was, lying still, said, I
Wow. I like that.
So this is something we're talking about, and we're interested to hear from our listeners. Are you interested in us doing a live recording of the age-old question? Let us know.
And if so, what is the question?
What's the question?
It's got to be a good one.
I think it'd be fun. I think, you know, if we came to a theater and did a live recording of the age-old question, we'd call up some of our guests.
Yeah. Or have a live guest.
Or have a live
like
guest.
Like get a real banger live guest, you know?
All right. What's your next?
My next one is another one that's kind of questionable if they walked away at their peak, but one of the members walked away from one of the biggest bands in the world. So here we are.
Okay.
R.E.M.
That's great. It starts with an earthquake, birds and snakes, an airplane. And Lenny Bruce is not afraid.
American rock band from Athens, Georgia. Formed in 1980 by drummer Bill Berry, guitarist Peter Buck, bassist Mike Mills, and lead vocalist Michael Stipe. And they were all students at the University of Georgia. First album came out in 1983, Murmur. Absolutely, I loved that record. Here's the situation. It's 1995. Monster had just come out.
Mm-hmm.
Monster was like their ninth studio album. They're on tour. Drummer, Bill Berry, he was singing this falsetto part in the middle of a concert in front of 20,000 people in Switzerland. Gets this massive headache. And he's drumming and he just doesn't feel right. And so like 90 minutes into the show, he just passes out, falls to the floor. Turns out he's got two aneurysms. One that has burst, one that hasn't burst. He's in the hospital for a month. REM calls the tour, no more shows. They all stay in Switzerland with him at his bedside.
Wow.
For a month.
Wow.
When your day is long and the night is yours alone.
They all go home. He starts to recover. He gets, you know, he's fine, doesn't lose any cognition. They go back on the road. Multi-instrumentalist Mills had to undergo surgery for an intestinal tumor, which was benign. And Michael Stipe had emergency hernia surgery. So from that tour, three of the four guys had pretty major surgeries. They get back home. Tour's over. 1997, they're going to Hawaii to start doing their next record. And Bill Berry's just not feeling it. And so he tells the guys, I want out. I want to be a hay farmer. He didn't want it anymore. So, in 1997, he quit the band. And REM went on to record many more albums as a trio. But there's another example of a guy in one of the biggest bands in the world who just didn't want it anymore. Didn't want to travel, didn't want the pressure, didn't want it anymore. Bill Berry just wanted to be a farmer, and he was done. So there you go. Bill Berry
walked away. He walked away at their peak.
At the peak.
I want to talk for a few minutes about the curious case of Lauryn Hill.
Strumming my pain with his fingers, singing my life with his words, killing me softly with his song.
She had found success as a member of the band The Fugees, which formed in the early 90s along with band members Wyclef Jean and Pras Michel. Their second album, The Score, came out in 1996, and it's one of the biggest selling albums of all time. It was a number one hit on the Billboard charts, helping them sell, Clint, over 22 million records worldwide. Bono from U2 called them the hip-hop Beatles.
Huh.
In September 1997, Lauryn Hill began work on her debut solo record, The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. And in August 1998, the album came out, debuting at number one, selling 422,000 copies, which broke a record for the first week sales by a female artist. the lead single, Doo-Wop That Thing, debuted at number one, making Lauryn Hill the first artist to ever debut at number one on both the albums and the singles charts with their first solo release.
Yo, remember yo. Back on the Bully when cats used to harmonize yeah. like... Yo.
Rolling Stone included the album on its list of 500 greatest albums of all time. It won 8 Grammys. It has sold over 20 million copies,
wow,
making it one of the biggest selling albums of all time. All that to say, that's her one and only studio album.
Three weeks since you've been looking for your friend, the one you let hit it and never called you again. Remember when he told you he was about to Benjamins? Yeah. You act like you ain't him, they give him a little trim to begin. Now you think you really gonna pretend like you wasn't down and you called him again. Plus when you give it up so easy, you ain't even fooling him. If you did it then, and you probably
shortly after conquering the world with The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, she dropped out of the public eye, dissatisfied with the music industry and the pressures of fame. So, in some ways, Lauryn Hill walked away at the peak twice.
Huh.
She left the Fugees, and then she left
her own career.
For her part, she gave an interview in Rolling Stone magazine in 2021 in which she reflected on her decision to walk away. She said, "With The Miseducation, there was no precedent. I was, for the most part, free to explore, experiment, and express. After The Miseducation, there were scores of tentacled obstructionists, politics, repressing agendas, unrealistic expectations, and saboteurs everywhere. People had included me in their own narratives of their successes as it pertained to my album. And if this contradicted my experience, I was considered an enemy. Artist suppression is definitely a thing. I won't go too much into it here," she said. "But where there should have been overwhelming support, there wasn't any." She went on to say, "The warp speed I had to move at in order to defy the norm put me and my family under a hyper-accelerated, hyper-tense, and unfortunately, underappreciated pace. I sacrificed the quality of my life to help experience something that should have been unreachable before then. When I saw people struggle to appreciate what that took, I had to pull back and make sure that I and my family were safe and good." An incredible album, and she just walked away.
That was an incredible album. We listened to that album a lot.
A lot.
A lot. That was an incredible album.
I have to say, my bandmate Brian Chartrand, he does a killer cover of X Factor, which is a song from this album.
Yeah.
Let's just listen to it a little bit.
This could all be so simple, but you'd rather make it harder. Loving you is like a battle, and we both end up with scars. Tell me who I had to be to get some reciprocity.
I mean, this is an example of the industry just being the industry and just screwing up a good thing.
Yes.
Like, just leave it alone. Like, it just be cool, man. Stop.
Clint, can we do our segment, Let's Go to the Comments?
Let's go to the comments.
Let's go to the comments.
Curtis writes on Facebook in response to our episode, What's the Greatest Second Album of All Time? Really enjoy this episode, guys. Learned a few things. I would vote for Pirates by Ricky Lee Jones.
Huh. Cool.
Hey, Mo. Hey, what are you doing back in town, man?
Maurice Bertinsky, who hosts another show on the Pantheon Network called Love the Album, in which each episode is a deep dive into a different album.
Cool.
He responded to episode 38 on the Beatles track Free as a Bird. He writes, "Lovely episode, gents. I've been hard-pressed to find anyone to say how wonderful Free as a Bird is. People have told me that I've let my love of the Beatles blind me into how mediocre that song was. I think it's magnificent, and you guys really hit on what makes it so good. For me, the George Harrison sung guitar bridge is sublime." Thanks, Maurice.
Thanks, Maurice.
Whatever happened to the love that we once knew? Always made me feel so free.
Oh, this is good, Clint. We love to share more Mondegreens, more misheard lyrics. And this comes from you via Colleen Schuster.
Okay.
She shares a bunch of really good ones. Rock the cat spa. Like a spa.
Where you send your cat.
Where you send your cat when the cat is stressed out and needs some like R&R.
Rock the cat spa. Rock the cat spa.
Sweet dreams are made of cheese.
Oh, yeah.
Who am I to disagree?
It's the Vermont anthem.
I've got two chickens to paralyze.
I've got
two chickens to paralyze. On a dark desert highway.
On a dark desert highway.
Cool whip in my hair.
It's Stewie. Cool whip,
cool whip,
cool whip.
Ooh, let me have some of that cool whip. What'd you say? You can't have a pie without cool whip. Cool whip? Cool whip, yeah.
You mean cool whip?
Yeah, cool whip.
Cool whip.
Cool whip.
Cool whip.
Cool whip.
You're saying it weird. Why are you putting so much emphasis on the H?
What are you talking about? I'm just saying it. Cool whip.
Hit me with your pet shark.
Oh, no.
Hit me with your pet shark.
Okay.
Keep those comments coming.
Oh, God, they're the best part.
Let's go to the comments.
Another fascinating case is that of Bill Withers.
Yeah.
He became a legend with hits like Just the Two of Us.
Just the two of us. We can make it if we try. Just the two of us.
Just the two of us.
And Lean on Me.
We all need somebody to lean on. I just might have a problem that you'll understand. We all need somebody to lean on.
Just to name a couple. He won 3 Grammys, was nominated for 6 more, is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, the Songwriters Hall of Fame, but in 1985, when he was still very much at the height of his popularity, he stepped away from music until he died. Decades later. He started his career in an unusual way too. He enlisted in the Navy at 17 and served until he was 26. At the age of 29, he moved to LA to start a music career. But music was his night gig, he would say, for a few more years, while he worked as an assembler for Douglas Aircraft, IBM, and Ford. He was making demos during that time, and his debut album, Just As I Am, was released in 1971, but he kept his day job, because he was convinced that the fickle music industry couldn't be trusted. That debut album features Ain't No Sunshine.
Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. It's not warm when she's away. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. And she's always gone too long. Anytime she goes away. Wonder this time where she's gone.
One of the slinkiest, most soulful songs you'll ever find. Imagine that. He writes and records Ain't No Sunshine, puts it out, but still doesn't quit his day job. He's like, I don't trust this.
Man.
That album was produced by Booker T. Jones with Donald Duck Dunn on bass guitar and Al Jackson Jr. on drums. The guitarist on Bill Withers' first album, Clint. Any guesses? Stephen Stills.
Come on, get right out of Dodge.
In fact, Withers would tell a story about another member of CSN that helped him during that session. He was having a crisis of confidence during the recording session, and Graham Nash came in, and as Bill Withers explained, he sat down in front of me and said, "You don't know how good you are." He said it lifted him up when he needed it most.
Hey, I'll leave a young thing alone, but ain't no sunshine when she's gone.
And they finished the song they were working on, which was a breakthrough hit for Withers. Ain't No Sunshine reached number 3 on the Billboard Hot 100. The next album, Still Bill, from 1972,
that was the one,
featured his first number 1 hit, Lean On Me.
If there is a load you have to bear that you can't carry.
Here he is talking about how growing up in Slab Fork, West Virginia, a coal mining town, inspired the sentiment within the song.
When you come out of the coal mines, everybody's black. Plus, you're in a very dangerous situation. People have to have a certain trust for each other, you know what I mean? And then people become necessary to each other. So that environment, you know, will make you kind of get to understand the guy, you know, working over here because you want him to be reliable. You know, I think we all become the composite of the places we've been and the people we've met. And I think wherever you grow up, you know, you can go somewhere else, but you never really leave that place. You know, it goes with you. The good and the bad. I remember we had a phone and the people across the street had a refrigerator, so they gave us ice and they used our phone. Just the economics made people kind of share and help each other out.
You just call on me, brother, when you need a hand. We all need somebody to lean on.
And here's another great song from that album, Use Me. In this clip, he's talking about the mystery of songwriting, a subject we come back to again and again on this show.
If you're looking through the window instead of looking in that mirror, then there's a certain amount of memory in there, and a certain amount of what comes out of you is just exploration, you know. Use me.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I want to spread the news that if it feels it's good getting used, oh, you just keep on using me until you use me up.
It's a little bit abstract when you're just walking around trying to think up stuff. And there are no physical parts. You're just trying to grab something out of the air, an idea or something. And you realize that there's probably a little neuroses involved in that. A lot of it's just trying to solve the riddle of life.
Songwriting is just trying to solve the riddle of life. Still to come in his career would be hits like Lovely Day from 1977.
Then I look at you and the world's all right with me. Just one look at you and I know it's gonna be a lovely day.
Just the Two of Us from 1980.
Just the two of us.
but he'd always had a difficult relationship with the music industry. He tells a story of an A&R guy from Columbia Records, Mickey Eichner, telling him to record Elvis's song In the Ghetto. Withers said, "I'm a songwriter. That would be like buying a bartender a drink."
Huh.
That disdain led him to not re-sign in 1985 when his record contract was up, and he walked away from his career. He would say the fact that he found musical success later in life than most people did. He was 32 when Ain't No Sunshine hit. He said he was socialized as a regular guy who'd had life before music, so he didn't need music to complete his life. There's a great piece on him in Rolling Stone from 2015, talking about how disconnected he felt from the music industry. He said, "These days, I wouldn't know a pop chart from a Pop-Tart."
Good for him.
Side note, and not really complete thought here, but he often spoke about the fact that he had quite a severe stutter as a child. I've always connected that with the bit in Ain't No Sunshine. I know, I know, I know, I know, I know.
And I know, I know, I know, I know, I know, I know.
I wonder. We went to college with Bill Withers' son, Todd. We asked Todd if he wanted to come on the show, and Todd said that he doesn't talk publicly about his dad, and I totally understand it, though I'm disappointed because I'd love to hear Todd's perspective on why and how his dad walked away at his peak.
Yeah, and Todd must have heard all of that at the dinner table, right? I mean,
totally.
Yeah.
And Bill Withers is one of those guys, like, you know his music, but you may not, and partly because he walked away and shunned all the trappings of fame, you know his music, but many music fans don't know Bill Withers.
Right, sure.
All right, let's call our buddy Jeff Simons.
Hello?
Jeff, you're on the age-old question with me and Clint.
Hey, Jeff.
Yes. Hello, gentlemen.
So glad to have you back on the Age Old Question. This week's question is, who walked away at their peak?
That is awesome. The first thing is the walking away. Like, some people leave at their peak because the record company decides they're done paying for them to make music. And some people walk away at their peak because life takes them out of the game. My first thought is a guy I just hate. But Billy Joel's a good answer, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
Because he hasn't made a record in 30 years, I don't think.
Right.
So that's interesting.
He made a classical album.
He didn't walk away in the sense that he still plays 20 nights a year at Madison Square Garden, but he walked away from having to play the game of putting new music out.
Yeah. I mean, that's a really generous way of saying it. Have you heard that record, River of Dreams, right? Like, that, he was smart enough to at least know, like, I'm probably done.
Yeah, but he had a couple big hits on that record, didn't he?
In the middle of the night, I go walking in my sleep, through the jungle of down, to the river so deep.
Yeah, but it has, that's when he really started to sing like he was in a Broadway musical.
That's true.
So unforgivable. But if you could tell me that I could walk out of my house, get in a helicopter, fly to Madison Square Garden, play the same songs for 2.5 hours and be home while people are still filing out of the arena, I don't think that counts as still being in the business. That's just like picking up found money out of the street.
That's a really good point.
It's true.
I guess Billy Joel is probably like, that was a really surprising decision to stop making music, right? I mean, River of Dreams is a gargantuan hit, and it came out right after that Greatest Hits Volume 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 that, you know, it was like the CD that came with CD players for like half a decade, you know? It's like Wii Sports.
It's so interesting. You know, I went down a YouTube rabbit hole a couple days ago, and one of the videos that I found in that rabbit hole was Mick Jagger doing the top 10. It was on Letterman. Mick Jagger, the top 10 things he's learned after 50 years. So this would have been in, you know, 2014 or whatever was 50 years of their first appearance on the Ed Sullivan. Number 5 was,
nobody wants to hear anything from your new album.
Oh, that's so brutal.
True.
It's true.
And, you know, Billy Joel figured that out. He's like, why fight that fight? Clint recently went and saw Paul McCartney at Fenway, and you were telling me he played a couple songs from the new album. But if you play 3 hours and you play, you know,
two songs from a new album. And he set it up. It wasn't like he just played. He like set up. He's like, I know you want to hear the hits, but we're going to play the, you know, he knows.
Like he's apologizing in advance.
Exactly.
It cracks me up. You know, the Stones are playing Living in a Ghost Town on this tour, which for me feels to me like a hilarious attempt to make that shitty song relevant. Like, I don't know what they're thinking. Living in a ghost town. Nobody goes to the 60th anniversary show and says, boy, I hope they play the COVID single they put out. It's terrible.
Yeah.
But I, you know what? I am not that guy. I want to hear the new stuff. Like, if it's a band I love, like, you know, the Who are touring again, and I'm not going to go because they're not playing anything off the new record. I have heard them play those other songs a million times.
Right.
But if they were playing 6 songs off the new record, I would like pay big money for a seat up front.
Huh? Yeah.
Makes me sad that the big, like, you know, the last time I saw Tom Petty, he threw in a couple of Hypnotic Eye songs, but I would have been totally happy if he had, half the show had been deeper-ish cuts.
Well, Jeff, thank you for joining us again. It's always the highlight of the show.
So good.
I appreciate it. What is your, what's the best answer you got for Walk Away at the Top?
R.E.M., Milli Vanilli, and Outkast.
Oh, Outkast is a great answer.
I think they're probably number one.
That's a great answer.
Because they were huge.
And Milli Vanilli walked away in handcuffs.
They fell off the top.
They walked the plank.
Yeah. Mine is Bill Withers.
That's really good, too. Oh, that's
he's the right answer.
And he just walked away. And
you know what's great about that answer, too, is soul singers age like comedians. Like, a great soul singer has this 3 or 4 year window where you're like, this guy is the greatest singer ever. And then all of a sudden they start making unforgivably bad records. Aretha Franklin, Stevie Wonder, Al Green, Michael Jackson, everybody you can think of you would say is an R&B singer, they have this zeitgeist moment where you're like, oh, this, everybody in the world wants to sound like this guy and he is the best. And then, and it's the same with comedians, right? Like, a comedian is hilarious until they're not funny, and then you're like, oh my God, get off the stage. Oh, I'm so embarrassed. I don't know what it is about soul music and comedy, but they have a half-life.
Huh.
And it's just over. It's over for them. And Bill Withers got out before he made the 80s disco DX7 record that would have tarnished his whole career.
So true.
It's such a good call.
It's so interesting. Jeff, so fun to talk to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Jeff.
You bet. Thanks, guys.
Bye. Bye.
That was fun. All right, Clint, back to this first rule of show business. Always leave them wanting more. Some say it was P.T. Barnum, the legendary 19th century showman behind Barnum and Bailey Circus, who coined that phrase. Other phrases that P.T. Barnum apparently coined? There's a sucker born every minute.
Huh.
There's no such thing as bad publicity.
No, come on, that's a good one. Woo.
Nothing draws a crowd like a crowd. And without promotion, something terrible happens. Nothing.
Wow. He was a genius.
That's incredible.
That's an incredible life's work right there, let alone everything else.
Coin phrases.
Yeah.
The point is, the first rule of show business, leave them wanting more, has become the fabric of show business. And very few performers follow that rule. Of the artists we've talked about today, who walked away on top the best?
I think it's Sting. Because he left the biggest band in the world.
At their very height.
Only to become one of the biggest solo acts in the world.
That's incredible.
He did it the best.
He did it the best.
I love the Bill Withers story. I just love him just not needing it. You know? Like the fact that he was older and more mature when he found fame or when fame found him. I just love the fact that he realized that he didn't want it. And so he didn't stay with it. I love that story.
So the question is, did we do it?
I think we did.
Please let us know if we didn't. We love hearing from you. Thank you to Jeff Simons for joining us.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you to the Pantheon Podcast Network.
Thanks.
We love being part of this network. Check out Pantheon Podcasts, their incredible lineup of shows. some really, really good music history, music commentary podcasts. We hope you had fun, as much fun as we did, and we hope you'll join us next time when we answer another age-old question.
Follow us on Instagram at The Age Old Question.
Facebook, The Age Old Question.
We hope this conversation has sparked some ideas and thoughts of your own. Let us know in the comments.
But let's be kind, people.
Yeah.
No hating.
No hating.
Maryland sports fans, there's only one sports book in the great state of Maryland with over 50 years experience booking bets and supporting customers. Betfred Sportsbook at Longshots is now open and is the only sports book in Frederick offering cash betting on football, basketball, world soccer, and more. Visit the Betfred Sportsbook at I-270 and MD-85 in Frederick, right next to Longshots off-track betting. Go to BetfredSports.com for more information and your chance to win exclusive merchandise. Must be 21 or older. Play responsibly. For help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.